Hey guys, welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast, the only show handcrafted for small business entrepreneurs looking to explode their business. It's time to get your mind right so you can get your grind right. Are you ready?
I've had those few nights where I don't have enough money in the bank account and I've got payroll tomorrow. I've laid in bed and not slept and felt disgustingly sick next to my wife, who's beautiful, breathing so heavily, snoring, like dreaming like a goddess right next to me, while I am sitting there just cramped in my stomach, just disgusted with myself. You know, I've had that happen, and I don't want to pretend like I'm above this and never had that happen to me.
Hello. Thank you for hanging out with me today. My name, as you know, is Joshua Latimer. My mission is to deliver you, the listener, power-packed, no-fluff business insights by some of the small business success stories from all over the world. And today, I am joined by Kurt Kempton from Phoenix, Arizona. What a story Kurt has. Just 10 years ago, Kurt founded a cleaning company in Phoenix, Arizona, and he left his job at, guess what, a bike store. But he had no idea what he was doing, and he ended up, in the long run, scaling a very large company. He eventually even exited and sold his company in 2014. And here's a fun little tidbit. His company was actually ranked number one in the world as the most professional window cleaning company image by the International Window Cleaning Association. Wow, that's a mouthful. He's also now the founder and the CEO of Symphasize LLC, which creates business automation software and offers consulting for small businesses all over the world. He's well-known, he's well-liked, and he's full of business insights. Kurt, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Josh?
I'm awesome. I'm pumped up. I have energy today. I did the last episode I did was late at night, and I was kind of tired, but I'm full of life today.
Well, you do sound like it. That's pretty exciting for me to be able to talk to somebody who sounds like they drink 5 cups of coffee today.
Absolutely. This morning I drank an energy drink before I ate breakfast, which I normally don't do and I don't recommend, but I did do that. My wife doesn't like talking to me about all this nerdy business stuff, but man, I honestly get excited about it. I think it's interesting. I think it's amazing. The parallels between different industries. I know you had a cleaning company like I had, but a lot of the success secrets – for any company, any service business especially, they're very similar. It doesn't matter if it's a cleaning thing, a landscaping thing, if you have a carpet thing, maybe even a pest control company. The recipe for success can be similar, and you have certainly had success. Can you tell us a little bit of your story, Kurt?
Yeah, sure. So I was going to college. I went to ASU, and I remember back in, it would have been about 2004, 2005, I graduated. And I remember I got this award called, my graduating class is the Outstanding Graduating Student. And I remember my wife thinking when I got that award, she thought, we are going to be so rich. Because it was like the valedictorian, but not based off of grades, just based off of like passion and energy and excitement for, going into the world. And so she thought everything was great. I was managing a bike store at the time. I had a business plan for a bike shop called Fantasy Cycles or Psychology. I wasn't sure which bike shop name was going to end up with, but I was really close to pulling the trigger on it. And I had an epiphany right after I graduated. I've been in retail world the whole time I was going to college, and I realized just because I love bicycling and I love racing and I love all that stuff, that does not mean I love retail. I had a little girl, and at the time she was just, I don't know, maybe like 2 years old, and she says to me on a Sunday morning, she says, "Dad, today's Sunday." And I remember being really impressed because, for a two-year-old to know what date is, that's pretty impressive. So I said, "That's right, today's Sunday. How did you know that?" And she said, "Because on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you go away, and on Sunday, you come home."
Oh, my word. That had to be like a punch in the stomach hearing that.
Oh, absolutely. So I let it sit there for a second and linger in my stomach, right? And I just knew that I was doing the wrong thing. I knew that retail, working holidays, working every weekend, doing all the stuff that I was doing in the retail world, it was not what I wanted. And certainly leveraging myself with a bunch of inventory wasn't something that I really wanted. So I began really looking at odd things, like things that people wouldn't want to do but need to get done. So I thought about starting a business where I would go to apartment complexes and take trash from doorsteps to the dumpster. I thought about pooper scooping. I thought about car washes. I thought about just all the stuff that, you know, landscaping. You know, some people hate it, some people love it. But my point is that I knew I wanted to do a business where people would say, I don't want to do it. I'm happy to pay somebody else. And I knew that as long as I made $50 an hour, worked 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year, I knew that that came out to be $100,000. And I knew that just did it for me. I knew I could do it. All I had to do was find a service I could do that would accomplish that. And I settled in on window cleaning, and the rest is history. I really got into it. It wasn't really until I was a few years in where I realized that systems was my forte. It's what I loved and was passionate about. And once I realized that's what was my passion, my business exploded. And then, of course, I started the software company and realized that the window cleaning company needed to go away, because I believe that a business is an extension of who you are as a person. And I knew that the way I could extend myself the most would be through software, and I needed to be able to retain focus on just one business. So
went ahead. Wow. Wow. What a great backstory. I mean, window cleaning is a unique business because, you know, it's high margin, it's mm-hmm. repeat, and it's niche. I mean, it's funny that you say that you looked at all these businesses, because I did the same thing. I singled out window cleaning because of those three reasons. The margins are high, it's a repeat service, and it's a niche. It's not a crowded space. And I think that's a good place to get your feet wet, you know, in business.
What happened was I just, in the window cleaning world, as I grew with employees, I really just realized that I had a crusade, and it was a very clean and understandable crusade. And so getting people to, you know, join my ranks, you know, employees, and helping my customers to realize what kind of a crusade we were fighting, that's really where all of our growth stemmed. And that's one of the reasons that we were able to be so differentiated. I think that it's really easy for a service to become a commodity. You know, I can get my windows cleaned by 17 different people in the phone book. They're going to be just as clean at the end of the day with any of those companies as they would be, you know, with your company, right?
So absolutely.
So that crusade became the point which we capitalized on, and were able to build a ton of value for our customers and set ourselves apart.
Well, what I'm hearing from you is this. I hear two things on what Kurt just said. Let me unpack that for some of the listeners, because Kurt focused on company culture. And he created on what I have coined, what I call the value gap. You don't want your business to be a commodity, meaning that its only value is price-based. You don't want your service to be, you know, your price versus the next price versus the next price, which one's the lowest. No. Well, how do you get out of that trap? Well, you do it by creating a value gap. You want your company to look, feel, smell, taste, and sound super more expensive than it actually is. And you might be double the price of another person, but if it feels like a Ferrari and you're only asking for the price of a Corvette, it's still a tremendous value. And Kurt, I'm assuming you accomplish that through a variety of systems, but definitely one of the most important ones I would think would be the employee culture, the company culture. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the neat thing about window cleaning is that most people who have their windows cleaned already have pretty clean windows. You know, the people with the dirty windows aren't having it done anyway. So they've had service providers in their home, whether it was your company or another, and their past experience is the glasses that they view through when they are purchasing a service. And luckily, a lot of labor-intense companies really focused on price. And just from a retail perspective, I know a lot of people would say, okay, so that's the Walmart, right? You know, we're going to be able to get your windows cleaned as cheap as possible. And I think with that came a lot of negative experience. And because people had negative experiences, and we were able to speak to those right out of the gates and then blow their minds from the experience, it translated to, you know, obviously everyone wants referrals and stuff, but we did get a lot of referrals and we got a lot of repeat business. But our employees at the end of the day felt really special because the customers were telling them how special they were.
That's huge. I mean, people overlook this a lot. I nobody knows this, but about 2 weeks ago, I sent on a survey to over 300 people that had I had worked with my ebook and stuff. And I asked them a simple question. What is the number one area of your business that you struggle with? And to my surprise, I honestly did not expect this. The number one most overwhelming answer was employee issues. And this is a huge one. You go on Facebook, you go into the forums, you go on the message boards, and people say, you can't find good help. There's no good workers out there. It's impossible. Nobody wants to work.
You're making me crazy. Oh. You're making me crazy.
Me too. I mean, and there is an element, a very small element of truth to that. And the fact that, yeah, it takes work to, you know, find some talent. In fact, we would actually recruit talent, but that's a different conversation. I think what you're saying is your intentional focus on company culture and making your employee feel special. The byproduct of that is customers that think your company's awesome, which means money for you. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I talk to so many business owners all the time, and I just wish someone would surprise me by coming out of the gates and saying, the biggest asset to my company is the culture that we've created and the employees that we have in our company. But all day long, and I say all day long, I've been surprised and I've been happy with plenty of companies that were able to get past it. But I feel like people do a bad job of finding employees. They have a negative experience or a lot of negative experiences. And then they say that there are no good people out there. And that's because they're looking through the glasses of somebody who did a terrible job finding employees and then said, oh, obviously everybody out there is terrible. I hear it so much. And I refuse to believe that God created a world with a bunch of inept, non-caring, dispassionate people. It's not possible that every person is a bad person. It's not.
No, absolutely. And I encourage small business guys, even if you're listening out there and you're your only guy, you are the guy, you're the HR department, you're the office worker, you're the technician. You have to view yourself as a chief executive officer for your company. And employee issues and every other issue in your business, this sounds harsh, but it's absolutely true. I'm sure Kurt will agree. All of the bad things in your business are 100% your responsibility. They're your fault. They fall on your watch, right? So if you're having bad employee issues, rather than looking externally and saying, boo-hoo for me, how crappy are all the workers around here? You need to look internally and say, what am I doing? Why don't people want to follow me? What can I do better as a leader? How can I inspire people? How can I lead people?
Well, that's right. That's where the crusade comes in. If people – so here's the thing. What you just said is going to make it is not going to make any sense to people who've been a victim their whole life, and unfortunately, that's from the U.S. population, business owner, entrepreneurial side. I think a lot of people have negative experiences, and so they become victims to the situation. But let me just see if I can color in the lines of what you just said. No, it is not your fault if someone's going through a divorce. No, it is not your fault if somebody has had a lot of sickness in their home and therefore they're feeling grumpy about that, or if they are. You know, they spent money unwisely and they're having financial problems or whatever. And those happen to be your employees. But here's the thing is that if someone starts every day going on to a crusade to make customer service the most amazing thing and blow people's minds with their skills, then they're going to do a great job. Let me give you a quick example. A lot of actors and actresses, they provide a service, right? They go on movie set and they act. And you know, the A-list actors and actresses, they make millions and millions of dollars for their craft. Now, I don't know if there's a more unhappy group in the whole world than actors and actresses. They're taking uppers and downers, and they're divorcing people as fast as they can marry them, and just all sorts of crazy stuff that we don't even know about. I'm not talking about what the tabloids even report. I'm just saying that a lot of people think that money makes you happy, and actors and actresses prove that that's not true. My point is that when they start their day on the job, they've got this crusade, this persona that they've got to take on. They embody that. You can go to Disneyland, see everybody who works for Disney, and see how even the janitors have this thing that they're fighting for that's worth more than money, that allows them to escape whatever the reality is at home that's maybe sad or a total bummer. If you're not providing that for your employees, well, then yeah, that's what they're going to dwell on. But it's your job as the business owner to be that cheerleader, to provide value and mission for these people, to know that when they strap on their, you know, belt for the day, that they're going out to help fight for a cause that's worth fighting for. And yes, it is your fault. If the employee is giving negative experiences, it's because they don't know how, and that's your fault, or they don't care, and that's your fault too. You either fire them or you figure out how to either get them to care, or you got to let them go. And a lot of people have a hard time making those decisions too.
Well, I think that, first of all, profound what you just said. People literally should rewind this and listen to it again, because if you don't get this, guys, you're gonna struggle a lot more than you need to. A lot of small business guys, they want to be the quarterback and not the coach. They want the glory rather than to be behind the scenes. And I think we got to be the coach. You know, that's what a CEO is. You said the word cheerleader. We have to create a storyline for our companies, and we got to get a place at the table set and ready for each team member. They need to know where they fit. They need to know that they're valued, and they need to be able to see a future at your company. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Taking that cheerleader paradigm and shifting it over to coach, that's exactly where I like to go when I'm talking to people. And the reason is that a lot of people think they're the ticket takers at the stadium. Like, my job is to make sure that my patrons to the stadium are happy. And actually, you need to hire people to make sure that that's in place, or you need to put systems in place to make sure that people are happy. But yes, you've got to focus on the fact that you get out there on the field, make sure the players are doing what they've got to do. And again, you already talked about the owner-operator situation. If you are the player, you better make sure you're taking time to coach everything that happens out on that field, because the people in the stands are going to be happy as long as your team is putting on a good show. If your team's not putting on a good show, you don't need a ticket taker. You don't need someone walking around the stands selling hot dogs. You've got to focus on making sure that the plays are getting done. You've got a winning strategy, and that strategy is getting carried out, and every single teammate is taking it to heart.
Are you looking for a simple way to get more sales, more referrals, and strengthen your customer loyalty? Look no further than SendJim.com. It was handcrafted for you as a powerful tool that will automate your follow-ups after the sale. Imagine being able to stay in contact with your customers all year long by pushing a single button on your smartphone. This is a space-age warp speed technology, and it will eliminate the chaos inside your business caused by trying to properly follow up with all of your leads and customers. Sign up for a free trial with no credit card required at sendjim.com right now. What are you waiting for?
And I think with sports, everybody looks at that and goes, well, duh, of course. And then they walk into business and they go, all right, I'm going to go take the tickets and make sure everybody's happy. No, no, no.
Exactly. I mean, let's just keep rolling with the sports thing. First of all, this is about more than money. And you said that earlier. That's the absolutely 100% true. For employees, whether you realize it or not, their self-worth, their value, and what they do and their attitude throughout the day has a lot more to do than just money. And that translates to sports as well, because you got guys getting paid tons of money, right? But they still want to win the championship. And maybe there's a little bit of prima donna stuff going on, but the underlying premise is true. And it's that we all want to be part of something. We want to be part of something bigger than ourselves. We want to get caught up in something. And your job as a CEO is to create the storyline. And the last thing is that you, if you're the one-man guy, you're your own first employee. And every person that joins your team in the future will do exactly what you do, except a little bit less. And so your job is to raise that bar and to coach your own self through every single area of your company.
Yeah, and that's what I spend a lot of time focusing on. You know, when we're doing consulting and stuff, that's what I will help people with, is to understand this is what your role is in the business, and this is how you hold people accountable, and this is how you spell out the playbook. And I know people talk about it being an operations manual, but I don't know how many people think the operation manuals actually get read. But my point is that you've got to understand what it looks like. And then every day, your job is to make sure that it looks more and more like that, and that everybody else understands what it's supposed to look like.
Yep. And you don't have to get overwhelmed, guys. You do not have to panic if you haven't begun this process yet. If the light bulb is starting to go off inside your head and you get that knot in your stomach of excitement, but also fear, don't worry about it. Start small. Do something today to enhance your business and to move you towards this path. You know, I call it an MVS, Kurt. It's a minimum viable system. It doesn't have to be, you know, 17 pages complex with fail safes and three plan B, C, D, all that. Just create something. Enhance something. The way that you talk to your customer, do it in a consistent, duplicable way. Maybe that's what you can focus on this week. Maybe next week, maybe the documentation, the way that you document the work that you do throughout the day. Maybe you enhance that, make it a little bit cleaner, a little simpler to understand. Because at the end of the day, if you want to escape the rat race, if you want to have your business serve you rather than you be a slave to it, you've absolutely got to start building systems to get yourself outside of your business.
Yeah. And the system starts with what you're trying to accomplish. And unfortunately, most of the people I talk to don't know exactly what they're trying to accomplish. And just as a quick hint, if you have a carpet cleaning company, what you want to accomplish needs to be clean carpets and something else, because clean carpets is a commodity, and maybe that's the game you want to play. I don't relate well to people like that, but if all you want to do is just clean carpets, it's going to be very, very difficult to enjoy your time as a business owner, because there's no vision or values or mission or anything. But as long as you can figure out that I make widgets and this is why you should buy from me, then you can start creating systems around that.
That's a really good point too, because let's circle back to the value gap. That's what I call it, because when we would give estimates, there is a lot of times, this is the truth. God is my witness. Okay. Our price would be double someone else's and we still get the job every time. And the reason isn't because I'm a superhero genius. The reason is because our systems and our company created a lot of perceived value throughout the whole customer lifecycle. From the moment they reached out to us, to the moment they got that estimate, to the follow-up after the estimate, there's a ton of perceived value being created subconsciously, right? So we had a tremendous value gap. And even though maybe we were $500, it felt like we should cost $1,000. And even though the other guy was $200, it really felt like he should cost $150 because, you know, he wrote his price on the back of a business card and, you know, he smelled like cigarettes or something. I don't know. My point is that just like Kevin Dabrowski, who's a friend and a very smart business guy and consultant, he preaches this all the time. Create a lot of perceived value and build your systems around that.
Yeah. You want to be able to make the promise that nobody else is willing to make. You've got to be willing to keep it, right? So the way we always say it is we got to be willing to keep the promises that no one else will make. And you just need to know what that is.
That's a great point. Let's move into some questions, Kurt. I want to drill down into some nitty gritty stuff here. First of all, I know you're a reader. You yep. consume information just like I do. We're junkies, right? We constantly are feeding the brain. What's your favorite quote?
Well, I just recently read a book about Amazon.com and kind of how it went up. So at any given time, my quote could change. But Jeff Bezos said that he knew if he failed, he wouldn't regret that. But he says, I knew one thing that I might regret is not trying. So I'll say it the way he said it. He said, I knew that if I failed, I wouldn't regret that. But I knew one thing I might regret is not trying.
Absolutely.
And that just resonates through my head all day.
Absolutely. I mean, I just put a Facebook post out that said, I do my best work with a knot in my stomach. Right. Mm. And fear, you know, this is one of our other questions here, but fear can really, you know, sideline you from doing amazing things if you let it. What's the biggest single business mistake that you think you've ever made?
Well, I think that the biggest mistake I never made was the retail store. I think, you know, I was literally within weeks. I already had Psychology Inc. I wasn't sure if I was going to do business as Fantasy Cycles or not, but I knew for sure that I was going to open a bike store. I had all my vendors and everything lined up. Had I closed on that SBA loan that was just going through and gotten millions of dollars of inventory and chained myself to that retail store, I think that would have been probably the biggest mistake I would have made. But aside from that, having not made that mistake and luckily sidestepping it thanks to my two-year-old daughter, I would say that in our first software release, I had no idea anything about software. I knew how to write some HTML code and stuff, but I spent about $45,000 on code that needed to get thrown away, and that was about a year of my life. Yes, we were able to, you know, put it out as a minimum viable product, and we were able to, you know, help some businesses with it. But I can't tell you how bad hitting the delete button hurt in that situation.
Oh, man, I can relate to that on a firsthand basis as well. And actually, your first answer, which is your biggest mistake was the one that you dodged the bullet on. That's actually really interesting, because people listening to this show right now, you guys can dodge lots of bullets too. You do not have to reinvent the wheel with this stuff. You just have to do what successful people have done, like what Kurt's talking about, what some of our other guests have talked about. You know, try to open your eyes to see what bullets you can you can dodge in your own business as well. As far as the software thing goes, I mean, that was you with the knot in your stomach out trying stuff, taking risks, making moves. And, you know, I respect that. You know, I told my parents when I was 18, Kurt, I said, if 9 out of 10 small businesses fail, I want to get my first 9 done as soon as possible. And they thought, you know, I was totally broken and they dropped me on my head or something. What's the best book that you've read in the last year?
Well, within the last year, I'm kind of embarrassed to announce this just because I know this book's been out a while, but I just read, it's called Start With Why. It's by Simon Sinek. He's actually, I guess, the founder of TED Talks, and he really focuses on that book about encapsulate. It's something I guess I always understood as I was building my businesses, but something that had never really played out in a nice, organized way, the way that he put it together, and really encapsulating your business around why the heck we're doing what we're doing. So it's kind of the why, and then it's the how we're going to do it. And then it's the what we do.
Absolutely. People get completely backwards on that. I mean, for real, people are obsessed with the how questions, and they need to be obsessed with the why questions. I mean, when I talk to a non-entrepreneurial person and I'll say an idea, man, you know, there's so much opportunity in Central America and South America. You could do this. You could do that. The only thing their brain can focus on is the how. You know, all the little bullet points, the 10,000 pages of all the procedures, and you need to transcend that a little bit. And if you get a strong enough why, to me, the how can work itself out a number of different ways. Would you agree?
Absolutely. That's actually one of the things that the book really does, is a lot of people start with the what, the product, and then they go, okay, how are we going to do this? And then they never even get to the why, like, why are we doing this? And people, Simon says, people don't buy what you have until they know why you're doing it.
Mm. Yeah, the importance of a story. I mean, there's importance for you as a CEO to create the story for your employees so that they have a seat at the table and they understand their participation and their future upside. And there's also your job to create the story for your customers and where they fit into this story.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that is kind of the final masterpiece, right, is to say the why is for you. And that's when people it'll resonate with them. In their heart, they'll go, I can't not buy this thing or this service or whatever it is, because it was built specifically for this situation that I am very familiar with.
Absolutely. That's powerful stuff, man. That's good. That's really good. Let's talk about fear for a second. You know, what role does fear play in the minds of business owners? I know for me, I talk about this a lot. I think it's important. I think people can relate. But fear is a dirty little dog that sticks its head up at the most inopportune times. What role does it play in the average business owner, and what can they do to overcome it?
Well, I think that I've had those fear nights where I don't have enough money in the bank account and I've got payroll tomorrow. I've laid in bed and not slept and felt disgustingly sick next to my wife, who's beautiful, breathing so heavily, snoring like dreaming like a goddess right next to me while I am sitting there just cramped in my stomach, just disgusted with myself. You know, I've had that happen, and I don't want to pretend like I'm above this and never had that happen to me.
Yeah,
I
no have. Way. No way, of course.
But I think that in my experience, I found that most of the people I talk to fall into one of three categories. There's the, when it comes to fear, there's the I can'ts, the people who say, I can't do this because I'm paralyzed with fear. I am overwhelmed with work. I'm trying to not be passionate about what I'm doing, but I'm actually trying to skirt around all of the hard work and all of this, the grinding, the sweat, you know, the stuff that I should be doing. I'm trying to figure out the work smarter, not harder approach. And unfortunately, that leads to a lot of I can'ts. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't work smart. I'm just saying that a lot of people who are scared are the people who don't want to get their hands dirty, people who are afraid to think big, who are afraid to think beyond tomorrow because that would be too overwhelming for them. And frankly, those people, they're going to have a real hard time in an entrepreneurial lifestyle. They really should be looking to be an employee for somebody who will serve it up to them nicely. I think they're going to find more value in life. But that's just my approach. Then there's the I cans. The I can people tend to fall into a group of possibly, if they've been in the I can group for a long time, possibly analysis paralysis. What I mean by that is that I can do this, and they'll sit down and they'll write up a plan. And then the question is, do they go out and execute that plan and like make a reality of it? Because obviously their plan's not going to work perfectly, but their ability to think on their feet, rethink, reassess the situation, all of that stuff. But it's the eternal planner. It's the person who never makes the leap, but knows how they would manage 100 employees. But I've got these three, and this is just where we're going to be at for the next, you know, indefinite amount of time.
Oh man, so true. So, so true. I can't wait to hear the third one.
Yeah. The third one I think is just so liberating. It's the I wills. It's the people who are empowered by their plan. They come up with that minimum viable plan, right? The system, and they put it to use. And they know it's not perfect. And they know this is version 1.0 or even 0.1, right? But it's something we can use today, and we'll use our experience from this today to reassess tomorrow. And that's okay. Every day you got to go out there, and you are going to have to replan exactly what you're going to do to make today work. I get that. But the problem is, the reason that the I wills do well is they don't let today's problems dictate their entire plan.
Absolutely. And they have the ability to zoom out, first of all, get a bird's eye view, and they have the ability to execute. And you're 1,000% right. People don't do it. They don't do stuff. And if you're listening to the show right now and you're not out there doing stuff, then you're missing the boat. You can't be a consumer only. You have to start producing stuff. You can't only absorb information. You have to start producing information, right? You gotta do it. You gotta be a doer, not just a listener or a learner. Listen up. Now, remember, being self-employed is not the same as being a business owner. And if you are looking for a way to automate your business and build yourself a clear path to the dream that keeps eluding you, then check out my online small business bootcamp. It's a go at your own pace. It's power packed. It's a mind bomb. It will help you understand exactly how to architecture out and systematize your small business right now so you can finally be back in control. Go to windowwealth.com right now and check it out. Use the code MINDBOMB to save 30%. It's time to invest in yourself.
Right. And that eternal planning that the I cans can fall into, I can do this, I can do this, but they're not doing it. The difference is that they're probably too scared to go out and actually make that leap. And I get it. I totally, totally get it. But let me just say that the I will people, what they do is they use that fear to calculate their risk. Jeff Bezos, he also said, a lot of times the question is, why should we do this? But he said an equally valid question is, why shouldn't we do it? And I think that that's where fear becomes an amazing tool for us, is to – I think good entrepreneurs, just this comes naturally to them, is to come up with a great idea, figure out all the reasons that idea cannot work, then overcome each of those obstacles. Sure, when you get into real life, you're going to find out there's more obstacles than you probably even were able to anticipate. But if you calculated your risk up front, you're going to be able to take all the really obvious stuff off the table immediately. And then you can actually take that risk, make that leap, and you will actually do it and find out that this isn't so hard after all.
Absolutely.
I just got up, I made that jump, and I crossed.
Yep. And at the end of the day, most people already know enough stuff to succeed right now, regardless if they even listen to this episode. It's not an information head knowledge issue. It's a behavior issue, right? If you're paralyzed by fear, ask yourself this one question. What is the worst that can happen?
And the worst that can happen is you're going to lose your house, live on the street with your family, and guess what? We live in the United States. There are programs to help you.
That's true, though. Go ahead.
I have four kids, so that is the fear that when I take a big, huge, calculated risk, that is the thing that runs through my head. But I happen to have a family in town, and I just say, you know what? We're not going to die.
Right,
but
exactly.
We may go down in flames. But you know what? I'll know I tried.
Exactly. I literally, in the early days, all the time, look, what is the worst that can happen? If you will stare that monster in the face every day, think about it. Ask yourself that every morning for the next week. What is the worst that can happen if I go all in? If I just go all in, just like in poker, right? You stop being an information junkie and you start being the executioner. You just start checking stuff off the list, moving forward, making moves, taking action, hiring, leading, scaling, growing, selling, being a monster, right? If you go all in, your back will be against the wall. Maybe your bridge is on fire. But if you can face what's the worst that can happen and you can look it in the eye and say, you know what? I can deal with that. It is the most liberating thing you will ever do as a business owner.
Yeah, and that's where I think that nobody jumps in order to wanting to fall. But you can really, with some good planning and some good contingencies, you know, making sure that your plan accounts for the reasons that might not work. If you take a really good look at what you're getting ready to do and you jump, you're probably actually going to land. I think that a lot of people are just so afraid of the fall that they never actually take the jump and find out you could have cleared that by a long shot.
I completely agree, Kurt. I mean, you've given some stellar insights here. And as we start to wrap things up, I want to talk a little bit about your software companies, because I was a customer of your software companies long before me and you ever knew each other and became friends and have talked, which has been several years now. Long before that, I was just a guy who wanted to try to automate and systemize my business. And my first introduction with your company was ResponsiBid, which is a software that allows – this is incredible. If you don't know what it is, let me give you what it is in a nutshell. Or maybe I should let you do it, Kurt, because you're going to even have more passion. But all I want to say is that I was a user of it. It provided huge value to me. Can you explain what that product is?
Yeah. ResponsiBid is basically a bidding software allowing you to take – specifications of a job, or you or any one of your employees, or even if you choose to install it on your website as a web form, basically, it walks people through the bidding process, giving specifications. It converts those into really gorgeous proposals that close well, and then it also puts together automation on your follow-up. So it automates the generation of the proposal, it automates the follow-up with that customer. And then it follows that customer through all of the steps to actually closing the job and then becoming a repeat customer, in fact. So it's designed to take all the stuff that your office should be doing that you either can't afford to pay an office worker to do, or you're not big enough maybe to do, or maybe a lot of human failure is at play. But either way, it takes all the stuff that everyone should be doing in taking their leads and nurturing them all the way up until being a customer and a repeat customer, and it automates it all.
Yeah, and I can attest to the power of that. It's very elastic. It's very flexible. It's very, very powerful. If most small business people don't even follow up with their customers, straight up. Let's just lay that out there. They just don't even do it. If they even make a follow-up call, that's like they think they're killing it, right? They're like, dude, I followed up. No, you didn't. One call after a bid, that's not even following up. Following up is a multi-touch process that happens every single time. all year round for every single one of your prospects and customers, and ResponseBit is a tool that guarantees that that's happening at a high level. Is that right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I get excited about it because it's amazing stuff. And, you know, it's like 8 times cheaper to keep a customer than it is to get a new one, right? So if you get somebody and they're reaching out to you, get them and keep them, and automating your follow-up after the sale and before the sale to make sure you're staying in front of your customers is one of the easiest and most powerful ways to ensure that you have low attrition, which means customers going out the back door. What about your other software company?
Well, it's the same company. It's a different product. So Symphasize builds ResponseBid, which we just talked about, and also another product called Preburner. Preburner is actually a free product that we make for anybody who hires. We're really passionate about employees, as you probably noticed early on in the conversation.
Yes.
And currently what I think most businesses do is they want to hire someone. So they'll put a web application up. They'll build a form on some like WooFoo form or something like that, Google Docs. And then they'll put it on their website and they'll go to Craigslist and push everybody to that application. And when people fill out that application, they'll know kind of the same stuff you would know in a resume. But as I'm sure you've experienced, Josh, the biggest thing that happens is this person sends in a great application. Then they come to the interview, and 5 seconds into the interview, you're like, this is so not working. Right?
Oh, it's happened countless times.
And it's infuriating that you've got this, maybe you make the interview last 10 to 15 minutes just to make it, the person not feel awkward or whatever. But that's the problem. What Preburner does is it allows you to build a web form that's geared to be an application through our software. You can install it on the same web page you would have installed a regular job application. But this time, you can actually ask for video responses to your questions. So as you build out your questions, you can say, this one I want them to answer with text, this one I want to answer with video. I'll give them 30 seconds to respond. And so now you can have like a bunch of 30-second responses or a bunch of one-minute responses combined with some other text fields or whatever. And now you can actually use the software to get a feel for the culture that this person brings with them, how they would fit into your business's culture. And you can actually rate them within your company, whoever's making hiring decisions, and have little chats in their profile. And then because of the automation we built for ResponseBid, we even went one step further and we made it so that you could just change the status of an applicant and actually set up automation, whether it be a rejection letter or an interview offer or something like that, that will actually go out to that applicant just by changing their status.
Unbelievable. I mean, if you guys are having employee issues out there, this is a tool that you need to do. You need to invest some time up front, build this out, and create yourself a little funnel to cram all the potential interviewees down. And then while you're out doing more important things, this thing is just stiff arming all the people that aren't a good fit, right? It's giving you an automated, while you sleep way to totally pre-qualify your potential team members. What an amazing thing. Guys, if you're listening, Kurt, he's a genuine guy. He does things at a high level. If they need to get a hold of you, Kurt, if they have questions or want to, connect, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can just go to symphasize.com. That's SymphoSize.com. And we have a contact page on there. They can hit me up through there. And there's lots of different things you can do to check out our products. But you could also just email me, Kurt, CURT@symphasize.com.
Well, we will do that, Kurt. And, I know you're a very, very busy guy, and I appreciate you taking time to do this interview. You've provided a ton of value to our listeners, and I know that they appreciate it as much as I did, Kurt.
Oh, it was my honor. I love talking about this stuff, and it's always awesome to talk to you, Josh.
Well, thanks a lot, man. Have a good 115-degree day down in Arizona. I will enjoy the breezy 76-degree Costa Rican weather. And we'll connect again soon.
Hopefully we'll meet in Costa Rica.
Yes, I hope so. Take care. Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you loved today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.